The Anton Savage Show
with Kearies.ie
on News Talk.
Gardening questions 53106 or 087 1400 106, because the one and only Brian Burke, gardening expert, is with us. Brian, how are you?
I am great, Anton.
Are you delighted that summer is finally amongst us? Upon us.
Do you reckon? Is it a bit of a false dawn? I don't know.
Is it not technically May? Once we cross May, we're not into it.
Yeah, officially and unofficially, you know, May 1st.
Oh, you're going by actual weather. Then obviously it's not. But sure, there's no guarantee it'll show up at all. Yeah. Is this the phase now where, have we missed the planting window, or is this the planting window?
Well, again, planting, you can plant anything if it's in sufficiently well potted or containerized, you know, and you're prepared, if we do get a dry period, to water it and look after it. You know, the planting season per se, autumn through, say, to March, April, is optimum planting time just because of the ground conditions, because it's moist. Plants have a better chance of getting started.
Yeah, but you're talking about real significant commitment to big tree-like things. Yeah. I mean, if I want to put in some tomatoes or an old strawberry that I buy in my garden centre.
Absolutely. Low-key, low-scale planting, absolutely. This is prime time. I mean, strawberries, gooseberries, fruit canes, fruit bushes. You can still plant annual seeds. You can plant veg and various salad bits and all sorts. This is prime time now, yeah.
The old strawberry is surprisingly hardy.
Yeah, yeah.
Does that yes mean no? Am I wrong? The reason I say this is because I had a surprise strawberry arrive in my garden. It just went, you remember me from a couple of years ago? I'm still here. And I came as a total shock.
No, they're surprisingly resilient. And you will find that. You will put them in 1 year. You'll take a notion to plant a few strawberries, put them into a bed and forget about them. And next thing, they're still there. They'll show up following years to remind you they're still around. They're great, great plant.
We have a lot of texts as always. And again, 53106. Some people want to just create work for themselves. Like, have you any tips on making my own compost? I never seem to have any joy. Life is too short, really, Brian, isn't it?
No, I don't agree. Making your own compost is one of the great joys in life, Anthony.
Is it though? Yeah. All right, hit us. How do we do it?
If you employ the appropriate methodology, and in that regard, I'd be a huge advocate of what's called the New Zealand approach, right? So the New Zealand approach consists of three separate bays, right? So you create bays out of old pallets or old timber lats. Make sure that there's air space between the lats to ventilate the material. And the secret to compost is to mix your green and the brown waste, right? So leaf litter, leaf mold, small twigs, along with grass cuttings, leaves, things like that. So make sure that you mix the consistency. Not too much green, not too much brown, and you'll get that kind of fibrous material working its way through the greener stuff, and it won't turn into sludge. It'll become a nice, lush,
which is what happens with grass clippings. Grass clippings form an awful, horrendous soup if you let them at it.
Exactly. And again, people who are experimenting with compost, they over-egg the whole mix with green stuff, with clippings, and it turns into an unusable kind of sloshy mix. Make sure you get plenty of brown waste in there.
So why do you need the three bays then? How does that work?
Well, you start them off and they will degrade to a certain point. You move it into the second bay. Then they degrade to a further point and you move it into the last bay to actually make it usable. So it's just stages of degradation, stages of decomposition. So mix it, turn it up, make sure you keep it turned. And the open bays with the airspace between the lats makes it easy to turn the material in there. So you just need a simple four grain garden fork to do that.
I have a friend who has what I think is a worrying obsession with making his own compost, and he maintains that the turning is the vital thing.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Because you need to keep that microbial activity moving. You need to agitate all those microbes. Keep the material aerated and oxygenated. That's the secret.
A text saying, how do I source non-invasive wildflower seeds, and can I sow wildflowers in containers and plant into the ground later?
Can I? Absolutely.
Non-invasive wildflower seeds.
Non-invasive wildflower seeds. Well, I mean, by definition, a lot of our native wildflower seeds would be, you know, again, we talked about these before, the native species like your purple loosestrife, your self-heal, your meadow sweet, your knapweed, your red and white clover, your bird's foot trefoil, your vetch, your leucanthemum, all of these things are native wildflower seeds. Cornflower, they're all, because of the way we've intensified agriculture over the last number of generations, a lot of these species are being marginalized, they're being squeezed out. So it is important that we try and persevere and try and propagate them and try and maintain them. So you can indeed, absolutely, you can propagate those seeds in a tray, in a pot, in a small space, and then plant them out into a permanent location out in the garden. Absolutely, can be done. The thing to do is to deplete the fertility of the area where you're going to plant, right? This is a big thing with wildflower. People cultivate an area and they plant the wildflower seeds and they expect it to just take hold and be beautiful and persevere then and be a perennial situation for years to come. You need to deplete the overall fertility of the area. You do that by stripping the grass. You can start with a pioneer plant called yellow rattle, right? Let me try and think of the botanical name. Rhinanthus, I think it is. Although, don't quote me on that.
Let me just whip out the Latin.
So you strip the grass, cultivate it, and then start with that pioneer plant called yellow rattle. What that does is it's not a parasitic plant, but it will deplete the grass and the scotch and the perennial grass in that area. So the biggest enemy of wildflower is grass because it'll overpower it. So the yellow rattle, that's your pioneer plant, that goes in, depletes the fertility, overpowers the grass, and then allows you to follow with the species mix that you want after. And that becomes a permanent perennial mix then.
Tech saying, could you please ask Brian why the leaves on my newly planted laurel hedge are turning yellow? They're down about 10 weeks and I've just noticed some of the leaves are gone yellow, even though there seems to be new growth on them. Should I leave them or take them off?
It could be pruning damage. I wonder did they say it's newly planted?
Newly planted laurel hedge.
Okay, I wonder, was it pruning that they got in the nursery or the garden centre where you got them? And then they came home, they got planted, and then we've had some frosty nights recently. So I would say that it sounds like it's frost damage on recent pruning cuts or recent shaping or management that they had. They got a bit of frost, and you will see this on laurel. You will see a bit of damage, and it looks very disconcerting. But laurel is tough. It's very resilient. It'll bounce back. It's nothing to worry about.
Should you feed a hedge?
Again, depends on the size and scale that you're talking about. I mean, something like a laurel, absolutely not, because they'll thrive in pretty much any ground conditions. They'll grow. Laurel will basically grow in gravel. They'll grow anywhere, you know. So there's no need to, definitely not to feed a laurel.
That's
hedge.
My kind of tree. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting one here that I think faces an awful lot of people. I've just moved into my first house in an estate in Portlaoise. My garden is about 20 meters by 10, surrounded by 6 foot high timber panel fencing.
Yeah.
There's literally nothing in it. What's the first thing to do? That has to be a challenge for a lot of people. Even if they have a grass, just looking at that big square and thinking, how do I approach this?
Just moved in. And what did you say the size was there?
20 by 10, 20 metres by 10 wide.
So it sounds big like enough. A kind of a housing estate situation. Well, the first thing, like what I would kind of promote as an approach, the first thing to do is to do nothing. Now that sounds counterintuitive, it sounds crazy, but you need to familiarise yourself with the space, right? You need to kind of, now, not to go all hippy-dippy, you need to kind of familiarise yourself with the essence of the space, right? So next Saturday morning, you're free and available. Get yourself a cup of coffee, pull a chair out from the kitchen, just sit in the middle of the garden and just absorb the space for about an hour and do nothing. And just familiarise yourself with the way the wind is blowing, the way the sun is moving.
This is more mystical than I'm used to.
This is very mystical. This is a mystical approach. And this is, you know, you just need, before you do anything, you need to do nothing. You just need to kind of figure out what you want to get out of it, you know?
But you see,
what
the environmental conditions are. I can do this, and at the end of my hour of being one with nature, I still won't know what to put anywhere.
But a few episodes of that will give you clues as to where you want to sit in the garden, right? You'll see, you'll figure out where the sun is moving. You'll figure out the way the prevailing wind is coming. If there's a Eastern European family four doors down who are doing beautiful home baking every Saturday morning, the smell will be wafting this way. So I want to sit over there and absorb that and enjoy that. All of these environmental factors will contribute to the decisions you make about how you populate the garden with features, with planting, with hardscaping, with paving, with pergolas, with entertainment spaces, all of these things. So the first thing is do nothing. Assimilate all this information, then start making decisions. Now, a tangible, practical thing that you can do straight away and that won't really impinge on anything is you can plant some trees, right? First thing to do in any garden is there are areas in the garden that you know are not going to be infringed further down the line by the presence of a tree. Corners are usually a good example, right? So get your trees in the ground. They'll slowly, happily, and very contentedly grow away there, not doing any harm or any damage to anyone. And lo and behold, 5 years' time, you'll turn around and go, my God, look at the size of that birch. Get your trees in the ground. That's first thing. And beyond that, do nothing.
An interesting one, and it's one of those ones where there's not a lot of detail, but a high level of expectation. Okay, so brace yourself.
Okay.
It says, thank you for your show. It is a great pleasure. Goes on to say, why are my pyracantha shrubs not coming into flower or producing berries?
Why are my pyracantha shrubs not coming into flower?
That's it. No more detail. That's what you got, Brian. Work with it.
Okay, pyracantha is a very kind of a woody, thorny, kind of impenetrable hedging plant, right? So they produce firethorn is the common name for them. They produce a fiery orange berry in the autumn. I would say I think as far as I can remember, they like a bit of acidity in the soil. So it could be that the pH of the soil is a bit off. It could be that the soil is a bit clay and it's a bit waterlogged. There could be several possible explanations for that. If a plant is not doing what it says on the tin, typically it's a soil problem, right? It's either a pH problem, it's a waterlogging problem, it's a lack of fertility problem. All of these things, most of the time, relate back down to the soil. If you can amend the soil, give it the food that it wants, you can usually rectify any situation.
Okay, you handled that challenge well. I've got a bigger one for you. My garden is infested with ants. How do I get rid of them? My grandchildren come in covered in bites. I would be grateful for any advice. Now, ants, Brian.
Ants. How do you get rid of ants? I mean, what is a cultural control for ants? I mean, that one has me stumped. I got to be honest.
Finally, I knew this day would come. Although technically, we did have to move out of gardening to get you
into pest control. How do you get rid of ants? I honestly couldn't give any solid advice on how to get rid of ants.
I knew finally we would get one. Question saying, how do we contain raspberry bushes in a bed? They're popping up everywhere outside the bed. Mint is like that. You have to watch mint constantly.
Yeah, mint is like that. There's a lot of plants like it. Bamboo. Did you ever plant one of those running bamboo Philostachys?
No, I'm very excited about the prospect of bamboo.
They will. They'll appear in the bed beside you if you're not careful, you know?
Well, how do I stop raspberry bushes appearing in the bed beside
you? Well, I mean, contain them. Put them into a raised planter, or you can get these things called tree guards or plant guards. They're basically a kind of a flexible piece of plastic that you put around the area where you're planting something, and they prevent the canes or the rhizomes or the stolons or whatever it is, the lateral growth, from moving beyond where it's meant to move. It's just a barrier. It's a barrier. So raised planter or a tree guard.
Brian, always a pleasure. That is gardening expert and, of course, super garden judge, Brian Burke. And as always, we have far more texts and questions than we could possibly get to. So we will get them up. And the next time you're up, Brian, we will get through as many of them as we can.
The Anton Savage Show
with Kieries.ie
on News Talk.